As I was listening last night to Leighton, that was very encouraging to me. I looked around the room and I saw several here who had a great effect in my own life. And I thought how wonderful it is that God uses fellow Christians to bring other Christians along. And Leighton was one of those. It was in 1976 that Leighton invited me to go to an executive committee of a Lausanne meeting in Bermuda. I don't know why I went, but I went. I had never been interested in missions before. And you can imagine the thrill that I had when there were top men from all around the world there at the time. I remember Michael Cassidy gave a talk that just really inspired me. So I came back and I was excited about missions. But that was Leighton playing God's role there. And then I saw Ron Jensen back here. He's more than just a pretty face. He invited me to come to one of his men's two-day conference and asked me to speak on financing the kingdom. I'd never done that before, and it was really a thrill, wasn't it? The response, it was the first time I realized that other people were interested in the same thing. So I thank God for Ron. And then Alan Finley, I saw Alan last night for that same meeting. Alan had called me and suggested that I invite a man from Indianapolis to go to this meeting in Palm Springs that Ron was holding, and the man was vacationing in Florida, and I'd never met the man or heard the man. I said, "Do you think he'll go?" He said, "Yeah, I think he'll go if you call him." I said, "I don't even know him, but I'll call him." So I called the man in Florida, and I said, "How would you like to go to a meeting where it talks to businessmen about how they go for the higher ground with the Lord Jesus Christ?" He said, "I'd love to do that." He said, "I'm on vacation down here. Where is it?" I said, "Palm Springs." He said, "I'll be there." And it was really interesting. We have become very close friends since then. And since that time, after hearing my talk and some others, he's giving a lot more money and he's giving a lot more effectively. So I just want to thank God for those of you in the room who have really had an effect in my life, and I've seen other ones who have had effect too. I think the best way for me to start, perhaps, is to talk about what God has done in my own life. Now, someone asked down at breakfast, "Are you going to talk to us about what it is the foundations want, the Christian foundations want, in order to give a grant?" And I told him that I really think that would be perhaps the wrong topic here. I can tell you what the McClellan Foundation, at the very end of the talk, what the McClellan Foundation looks for. But I said the majority of money, the great majority of money that will help fund the kingdom is coming from the church, from small donors and large donors. They're coming from individuals. The foundations, we estimate, are only giving, evangelical foundations, only giving maybe 3% of the large donor money. And we think at best, that's probably $100 million. And we know of two or three foundations that are doing their own work out there with their own research and not working through the mission agencies. So it's really a very small percentage of the total dollars. But Bob Screen is going to talk to you in the next session. He has more statistics than I do on how big a market it is for the large donor. But it's the large donor who has become very wealthy since the end of the war, who is now selling their business, and they're looking for ways to really make an impact for God. But first, by the way, can you hear back there? You can hear, all right. Let me tell you a little bit about what God's been doing in my life the last few years. And maybe you'll see here some hot buttons for a person who is all of a sudden being gripped by God and a person who has discretionary income and perhaps wants to start giving. There's four things that God worked through my life in the last 3 or 4 years. About 3 or 4 years ago, I felt He was wanting me to move out of the family business. The family has a big percentage of the ownership of an insurance company, and I'd been in the company for 23 years, and I felt like I was making about that much impact for God in the company. But I'd begun to work more and more on the family foundation, and I was feeling that I could make that much impact for the Lord in the foundation. And this was becoming a stronger and stronger feeling during my quiet time. But I did not make the move. And as I look back, that was a mistake. Why did I not make the move? I think I didn't make the move because of what's called the three P's. Power, position, and prestige. It is very, very difficult to leave and go. In addition to that, my dad wanted me to stay in the business. I was the only one active in the business. But I felt God was urging me to leave. As it turns out, 2 years later, I did leave, and now I'm 80% of my time in the foundation. And in the meantime, the business went downhill for 2 years. And looking back, there's no question I would have been in a better position being on the board than I was in management under the CEO. But that was a lesson. When God says move, move. How many of you have had that experience? This 2 years later, I ended up feeling a need to go out and see what was happening in the world, in world missions. I made two or three vision trips, and these really made a major impact in my life. Now, we've been holding conferences, three conferences, for others like myself, inviting them to come with the theme, give more strategically. And in those conferences, I usually ask the question, how many of you have been on vision trips? Not how many of you have been overseas, because most of them have been overseas for business or as tourists, but how many have been on vision trips with someone in the mission field? Very few have, surprisingly enough. One trip that made an impact on me was to go to Northeast Thailand. I did see Bunma's work of Campus Crusade, and in addition to hearing and having it substantiated by Peter Wagner that there is a significant increase of believers and in house churches, I observed the training of 40 workers, and this made an impact on me. Here were 40 workers who were being trained for 30 days and 30 nights to share the gospel, go back into their villages, teach Sunday school, and under some persecution. And I thought to myself, how many Americans, even in my own church, will not walk across the street once a week to even learn evangelism and discipleship? I use Operation Timothy, which is CBMC material. And then I saw before me there were nine generations of Christians. They had nine generations of Christians, and I wrote down the description. One man had led another woman to Christ, who had then led a man in a blue jeans jacket to Christ, who had led a man in a blue shirt to Christ, who had led a woman with a baby to Christ, and so on and so forth. And that really made an impact on me. Because in 15 years of using CBMC's Operation Timothy material, God had only used me to reach and try to disciple 15 men. And how many of those men had gone on to disciple and reach other men? I estimate only four went to the second generation. And here I was seeing eight or nine generations of people training other people. See, the comparison for going on this vision trip was so important for me because when you go overseas, you see the dramatic impact of what God is doing overseas compared to what's happening in the U.S., and you come back invigorated. I only saw a third of the trainees had Bibles. The Bible at that time would cost them about the equivalent of $1,000 as what it would be with the standard of living for a regular $18,000 or $20,000 worker in the States. So only a third of them had Bibles, and they were being prepared to go back in their own villages. But it was interesting that every one of them knew their objective, at least, you know, for the show that we had. And I'm sure it was a good show. And I don't mind that. That was good. It gave me some ammunition to go back and talk to people at home. And the talk I'm giving to you, by the way, is the same talk I give in some of these conferences that we have. But every one of those knew their objective. Their objective was to reach Northeast Thailand by the year 2000, you know, a 99% Buddhist country. And they were single-minded, and I thought to myself, hey, I'm not single-minded. Then the next thing I did was in the States, I visited some Christian world leaders. I considered you folks here Christian world leaders. Two characteristics I saw. The leaders were humble, and the leaders were single-minded. And I thought to myself, hey, I'm not single-minded. I need to go back and I need to be more single-minded. I've been trying to do too many things. Then lastly, I heard one of the Christian speakers at a conference talk about Gideon and his 300 men. How he'd had 32,000 troops, and God said, that's too many. Cut it back. So he cut it back to 10,000. And then he ended up cutting it back to 300. And this leader said, that's all that God needs is 300 faithful, single-minded people. Well, that was the last straw. I went up to my room and I just wept uncontrollably. And I had not wept like that since 10 years before when my 16-year-old son had slammed the door on my hand. That made me cry uncontrollably out of pain. But see, this was crying uncontrollably out of joy. And you have to recognize that some of us in the business field have really never been fulfilled in the business field. I was in the field for 23 years. And I told some people that the last 8 years were the most miserable years of my time. And Nancy, my wife, said, well, the whole 23 years has been a miserable part of your time. And I really think my heart and burden was not in business, nor were my gifts. My gifts were elsewhere. The next thing I did was visit two financial planners nationwide to see what it was that was causing people to give money and what it was that they could do to help me. One of them was Ron Blue and the other one was Greg Ring. Greg Ring in Dallas and Ron Blue. Ron Blue has 600 clients, all of them in the accumulating money stage or now have already accumulated. And their objective is to help them aggressively give to the Lord's work. And I want to show you some of his work. It's very good. Then the thing I did was, even on this trip back from Northeast Thailand, I sat down and I worked up a 10-year goal. And that was a very meaningful thing. And I want to try to show it to you here, if I can turn this machine on. Not sure I know how to turn it on. Just so you can get a feel for it. I was 49 years old at the time. You probably think I'm 60, but I'm only 49 at that time. Three grandchildren. I wanted to be productive for the next 10 years. I realized that between the 50s and 60s, I'd have more energy than I'd ever had following that. And so I decided maybe the Lord wanted me to maximize my time, and I decided not to go for ego trips. The power, position, and prestige had all hit home with me there. Don't be like the man who hears the word and the worries of the world, deceitfulness of riches, pleasures of life choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. But be like the man who hears the word, understands it, bears fruit 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. Now, I heard Ron Blue make a statement here. He said, do you know what 30-fold in the Old Testament meant? It meant 30 times. You know what 60-fold means? 60 times and 100 times. That is 3,000%, 6,000%, and 10,000%. Wow. And then he makes a good point there. He makes the point that no matter how much money I have, if I try to earn money on it myself, I can probably only earn 6% after tax. But if I let God take those resources, including money and talents and so on, that he can do 3,000, 6,000, 10,000%. And that made a lot of sense to me. At least annually, re-examine every aspect of my ministry and goals, eliminating the unproductive. This became more and more important to me. In one of those, I decided that I would step off some boards or not accept some boards. At one point, I was on 22 boards in Chattanooga. That was years ago. But I found that if I wanted to be single-minded, joining that hospital board really didn't make any sense. That I really need to give my time to become single-minded in the areas he was leading me in. Maximize my talent resource, which is to use my gifts of initiating organizer. I'm an initiator organizer. I don't enjoy the details. You know, hang the details, give me the summary. But I had to balance myself with someone of different gifts detailed research and policy-oriented, and I have that with my dad and Tom McCauley. Need to maximize my money resource, give yearly a minimum of 70% of our income. This is a discipline that we absolutely need. Nancy and I need that discipline. And we found a way over the last 10 years to do that and be able to take a tax deduction. That we have since lost that. But by showing this to other people at conferences, they thought, wow, I've never thought about that. I've only given 10% of my money. I thought that was all you gave. There's a friend of mine who earns $1 million a year, and he is so proud of the $100,000 that he has been given away. And I said, why are you just giving away $100,000? He says, well, I have a hard enough time finding places to give the $100,000. See, he's not well connected. he really isn't. And I'll bring him back up in a minute. But I said,
what was his address?
I think Paul Landry asked me for it, come to think of it. But he never thought about giving away more money, because $100,000 takes a lot of time to give away. And he's a Baptist, Southern Baptist. I guess they never have gotten to him, I don't know. Continually give more money from accumulations. Know my finish line. This is the first time I ever heard anybody talk about a finish line. Ron Blue said, there is a point at which we have too much money. And in America, we tend to measure ourselves by, is he a $5 million person? Is he a $10 million person? I know in business, when we look at other people with wealth, we do it. Is he an $80 million person, or what is he? Well, there's nothing biblically sound about that. A definition of that, of a finish line, is after your children are grown and you've provided for them to give them a little bit of head start but not run their initiative to work, and you've educated your children, you have enough for retirement, why do you need the rest of it? And I thought to myself, that's true. And so I know the finish line that I now have and the point at which I'm over accumulated, and Nancy and I are beginning to give the capital away. So I hope I'm not taking too much time on this, but it shows you how a business person with discretionary income might think. And then, you know, I tell the people at the conference, but first, I know none of the above is going to be helpful at all. It's the purity of heart. If I don't pursue personal holiness, to be sanctified through and through, I know that's absolutely essential, and to be a clean vessel. I mean, Gordon MacDonald's situation, I think, woke up a lot of people. Just to see how important it is that God will work through a clean vessel. For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the whole earth so that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his. Not weakly support or average support, but strongly support those who are completely his. Not 50% his, but 100% his. And I started a daily quiet time after having been in... I'm sorry, Louise. I hate to move out of this microphone here. I started a daily quiet time after I saw this man in Northeast Thailand named Buma wake up at 4:30 in the morning and have his quiet time. He had Bible reading for an hour and then prayer for an hour, and his staff woke up at 5:30 in the morning, and then once a month they go on retreats and they take a disciple with them and they go up in the mountains. Well, this was because I think he had seen this father was a Buddhist and had gone in the mountains many years saying, Buddha, Buddha, and trying to find Christ, never found Christ, became an alcoholic, and a Baptist missionary converted him. But I thought, well, if he can wake up at 5:30 and at 4:30 and his staff at 5:30, I can at least get up 5:30 myself. And Gordon MacDonald's written journal made a difference in my life, too. The need for a written journal so that you see when you're becoming arrogant, so that you see when you're writing things down, when you're kidding yourself. And I needed to show gratitude. I was not very good at showing gratitude. This was another discipline I had. Okay, I wanted just to show you that, starting off here. And then, turn that off. Maybe talk to you for a few minutes about what we find other givers are, what are their hot buttons in addition to mine. You can see my hot buttons. It was going over and seeing a dramatic change of what the Lord was doing from what they were doing in the United States. My suggestion now is that we turn to the second chart here, the Ron Blue chart. And this will give you some idea of what some of these people who attend our meetings have been running up against prior to coming to the meetings. We've been averaging about 100 to these meetings. There's been approximately three of them. And the results have been good. We've called them after the meeting, sometimes 6 months after, 3 months after. And we're first of all, we have 90% of them that say they want to come back and they want to bring a friend. But the ones that come tend to have a heart to give, but they've never seen the broad picture because most of them have not been overseas. They've never seen the broad picture. They never have heard the teaching of a Ron Blue, someone like that. And they've never networked. They've never seen that peers other than themselves are out there giving money. And it encourages them to know that someone's given 70%, someone else has given 50%. And just to talk among themselves has been great encouragement to them. I would say a third of them will tell us, you know, you've changed my life. My wife and I realize that we need to get out of our business and we need to dedicate ourselves to giving our money, giving more of it and giving more strategically. Or you've changed our life. Your conference has changed our life because we've never thought about having a plan for giving. Now we sit down, we have a plan for giving, and it's making a difference. Or someone else says, you know, I've doubled my giving. We had one dramatic situation where a man says, I'm giving $500,000 a year, but I see that I ought to be giving $5 million a year. And he's on the road to doing that. Now, we are not, I don't think, nearly as effective as some of these financial planners. I think they, even without our conference, are getting the same results. In fact, Ryan Blue's objective is, Lord willing, is to try to help clients give away $1 billion a year by the year 2000. And Lord willing, he'll make it. Now, on this chart, this is what his people have found why Christians don't give. Spiritual problems. 95% of Americans lack the spiritual commitment to give. That's the great percentage. That's down there at the bottom. And we know that because the average American only gives 1.7% of income, and the average Christian doesn't give much more than that. What is the average? 2.4 or 3%? Not very much. Christians also have financial problems. And you may want to write this in there. 80% of Americans have more debt than assets. 80%. 25% of their money goes to consumer and installment debt. They have 10 times more debt than they have tithe in total. And probably the Christians are a little bit better, but not a lot better. In fact, you know, most women work today for additional income to help with expenses. They found that 65% of the women work. And it's exactly the same percentage for Christian families. 65% of the Christian family ladies work. The next two, I think, are absolutely key. Ron Blue has found out the reasons why they don't give more is they have limited vision and limited relationships. They are not well connected. You know, if you have a $100 vision, you'll give $100. And that's it. But if you're able to become excited by a mission organization for a bigger vision, and that's one of the things I want to stress here. Here are these people who don't have, who want to make an impact for their money, and here are the mission organizations that sometimes can't communicate a big enough vision to excite them. I'll just take two men who went down to this conference from Chattanooga. One was given to environmental things. He had a very limited vision. He was a Christian. Inherited a significant amount of money. He came back and said, this changed my life. And he went to Romania and saw some things that were happening over there. And he says, I really want to start giving much bigger. Well, his vision had changed. Nobody had ever asked him to a conference. He's a member of a church. Another one is a member of our church. His four businesses had just shot up in value. He's worth quite a bit of money. And he said, I have seen and gone to our mission conferences, and I've never been able to quite get it. He said, because I see a $3,000 for this missionary going out doing this limited job, and I see that missionary going out. But he said, when I went to your conference, and I heard Don talking about the multiplication of churches that nationals could do, he said, all of a sudden, I saw the big vision. I saw that a lot can be done in each country with a little bit of money just to help the nationals get going. Well, that was the one thing that helped his vision. Another one was this man I was just talking about earns $1 million and giving away $100,000. I gave him a picture of what had meant a lot to me in my own life, and that was that coming back, and I had decided to take two Jesus film teams in Burundi. Actually, one was in Zaire. And here's the chart on that. And I've done this 2 years in a row, and I was really excited about the results. The attendance by this two Jesus film teams was 262,000. Indicate decisions, 20,000. Number praying to be filled with the Holy Spirit, 2,700. Those recommitting themselves to Christ, 300. Then the follow-up, those that had moved into churches, and the key here was that I was convinced, and they had convinced me, that there were good, solid Baptist churches following up and good churches in Burundi that were following up. But those that were moving into Bible study groups and churches, 8,943. And I thought, Lord, that is special for me. With a little bit of money, I could make a major impact with my money, your money. And also, I was struggling for a long time just trying to reach 15 men in Chattanooga over 15 years with my own discipleship. So I could see the major impact here of a little bit of money trying to reach some people for a church, for a follow-up church. And one thing I forgot was a principle that I learned was, would God own it all? And I did not realize that before meeting with Ron Blue, that God owned it all. You know, I had thought, yes, God owns it all, but here's the 50% that I give to God, and the other 50% is really mine. Well, I've changed since then. Well, I mentioned this about the Campus Crusade situation. He said, that's fantastic. He says, I want a couple of those. And then I mentioned to him about Slavic gospel. Adopting a church. I mentioned to him that the Lord had led me to adopt a church and then to provide some lending libraries for, where some of the members of the church would go into a town that didn't have a church, and they would lend out the Bibles and the literature, and then they'd sign people up for Bible study and they'd start a church. And they're getting good results. I said, that only cost X number of dollars. He said, that's terrific. He says, how do I sign up for those? And so I gave him the numbers to call. I think what it illustrates is, all of a sudden, this man was seeing a vision he had never seen before. His church probably has a mission program. Or it was being expressed in a way that really gave him an excitement that his dollars would make an impact for Christ. Then next, as you go on up the line, limited relationships. We can't underestimate the value of relationships. People still give based on relationships. They don't give to organizations, they give to people. They give based on relationships. And Ron Blue has stressed this. Not ask. That still is a major problem, is people are not being asked. And I think one of the reasons is they're just assuming that every person with high discretionary income has given all of his money away. But it's they haven't been asked, and I think they haven't been asked with a big enough vision, communicating a big enough vision. The last three is where the financial planner comes in. They don't know they can give and still meet all their objectives. That's the value of a financial planner. They don't know they can give and still meet all their objectives. There are terrific vehicles out there today for helping a person meet their lifetime objectives and significantly increase their giving now. And also, they don't know how to give. That's why it requires a professional to help. And then lastly, they don't plan to give. Ron Blue told us that once they move to this final stage, they will give 4 to 5 times more money than they've ever given if they develop a plan for giving. People have vacation plans, they have business plans, but they don't have giving plans, an active giving plan. And they don't know where the finish line is. They don't know where they've overaccumulated. So this has made a lot of sense to me. Okay. Three things we try to do in these conferences is to broaden their vision, because they've only seen very limited visions. We try to bring in 8 or 9 speakers and try to bring in nationals. Most of these individuals have only seen Americans in their mission programs. They have never really experienced nationals. They've never experienced a Chris Maritika, who has a vision and a burden to reach Indonesia for Christ and has a one-for-one-for-one plan. You know, when they hear that, they say, gee, that's terrific. You know, I know Partners has really used them. They also don't know how to do it, and they need to network with one another. Okay, moving back to the front sheet, there if we can, just for a minute. This is a little redundant, I'm sure. So this is a generalization, but so often we find that wealthy Christians, and wealthy Christians can be anybody really with discretionary income, they are not world Christians. In Chattanooga, of the 30 or 40 wealthy Christians that I know, they're not world Christians. They don't think outside of Chattanooga. These three that went down there do think outside of Chattanooga. But we have some there. We have one that just gave an evangelical that just gave a $3 million gift to a civic group. And another one just gave a $3 million to build a, better not be too specific, but build a chapel on a high school campus, because he wanted to make an impact for God. But they're also not well connected. And we found out when all these people came to this meeting, and they said, we have never heard anything like that. Well, what they had heard is maybe the one person, the one ministry that they're close to, but they had never heard all of them together, 8 or 9 together. It really doesn't make that much difference who they hear. They just all of a sudden see the big picture, if Leighton Ford or whatever. They've never heard Leighton. They want to make an impact for their money. This comes across over and over and over again, probably as the most important item. Ron Blue says that people are looking for security and significance. And before they're committed Christians, they look for security and significance in money, in businesses, in prestige. The three P's, power, position, and prestige. When they come to know Christ in a meaningful way, then they see that Jesus is their security and their significance. But guess what? That's when they want to make an impact for Christ with their giving. And I do say once again, I don't think too many of them see it packages that excite them. Here's the giver who doesn't have much time. He needs a vision. He wants to make a major impact. And here's the organization that has a hard time communicating that impact. There was one faith mission organization. I just happened to be involved with them just a little bit, who saw a need, in fact, Bob Screen awakened them to the need, that they needed to express themselves differently to major donors. So often a faith mission has major donors out there, donors, 10,000 donors, but they don't know which ones are majors and which ones aren't. There may be a Forbes 400 wealthiest person in there, but they don't know it. You know, until you qualify your prospects, you don't know it. But there was this situation where they were expressing their needs in terms of items, not end results, like an item. We need a missionary house. We need a mobile home. We want to increase our missionary force from 100 to 200. That doesn't excite anyone. That doesn't give them the vision of the end result of the impact they can make with their money. They want to make an impact with their money. They want to have an end result. And why should Campus Crusade be the only one out there doing this? Or Slavic Gospel or whoever. There's only a few. It's interesting that they did package their vision differently with a new thrust, an exciting thrust of reaching unreached people. And I heard just the other day they went by and talked to one man who had never given them more than $10,000. They were checking piloting this program. He heard what they had to say. Something turned a light on with him. And he says, I'll give you $300,000. Now that was interesting. I mean, I don't know what caused him to do that. But I know what would cause me to do that is if someone came and I saw the end result was going to make a significant impact for Christ. Campus Crusade says they are getting the largest gifts, and this is in a Jesus Film group, they're getting the largest gifts of any from what they understand, and they're picking it up from the businessman entrepreneur, the one that's really accumulated this wealth since the war, because they want to make, they want immediate results, and they want to see the results have an impact. Next, that's not the right wording. Lukewarm on missions programs. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here. I am totally sold on missions and the missions programs. And the stronger the mission program is in the church and the stronger the emphasis that has been given it, the more that person who comes to our conference is turned on for the Lord and turned on for missions. However, sometimes they don't see the total picture. And once again, you know, they see a single missionary going out, an American missionary coming back, and they tell the story. This is what's happening in my little village. They don't see nationals. They don't always realize that nationals are the ones, you know, the two-thirds world missions movement is going five times faster than the American mission movement. They don't see that countries can win themselves for Christ. They don't always hear that. And so often the wealthy person won't take the time to get involved with his missions committee. The missions committee so often are faithful people who want to help, but they're not doing strategic planning. There are many exceptions, but they're not doing strategic planning. They're not doing something that would excite with the end result, like taking on an unreached people group. So they have some of these people tend to stay away or just give a little bit. I think of one church that has four people worth close to $1 billion. They're giving very, very small amounts to their mission committee. And I think it's because they have not been excited about a bigger picture. Also, these people don't have time. They're running businesses, and so the message has got to be quick and to the point, and it has to excite them. Now, let me see here. I checked with Barna, and I'm sure ACMC has better statistics. But Barna's latest statistics on some churches they surveyed showed that over 50% of the churches view their foreign missions program as somewhat important. I think that might be part of the problem. There's only about 30% that view their missions program as very important. We need to be praying and for the work of ACMC and all of you that are going and doing that work. But I think that has an effect. Okay, what are we trying to, in the last few minutes here, I want to try to show you what McClellan Foundation sees is important. But first, let me just say this, and we could maybe discuss it this afternoon if you wanted to. There are efforts that need to be undertaken. I would think there needs to be more of these seminars of reaching some of the wealthy people to give them a bigger vision. We have one in at the Ritz-Carlton in Laguna Niguel in February 12th through the 14th. If you have some names of people you'd like to submit, John had one down here, we'd be more than happy to invite them. A number of these people are bringing their baby boomer children because they're going to be passing the money on to the baby boomers. Let's don't forget, $6 to $8 trillion of money is going to be passed in the next 15 years. $6 to $8 trillion. If only 5% of that is evangelicals, you're talking about $300 million, $300 billion. If 10% of it is evangelicals, you're talking about $600 billion. So while it's the churches that are providing most of the money today, and thank the Lord for that, and not the wealthy people, they're still only a very small percentage. There is still a significant amount of money that is going to be transferred from one generation to the next. And a third of those are family businesses, and many of them will be sold. We've been meeting with some evangelical foundations to help each one of us give more strategically. A consultant came up with an idea of packaging some of the statistics that you saw on Ron Blue's information here, and my testimony, and Pat McMillan's piece here I want to give you at the end called Strategic Giving, packaging on tape some of the talks on there. He thinks they're very good, and making them available for missions. Maybe they ought to be made available for denominational heads, missions too. Making them available so that they could send them with their own message to major donors that they have. That makes a lot of sense. We wondered whether there shouldn't be an organization. We thought about trying to help, if it's the Lord's will, to run vision trips. Would people go on vision trips if it was a neutral entity that was sponsoring it? We hoped this January to meet with a group of full-time mission heads of large churches with some nationals to exchange ideas. There's a need for foundations to exchange ideas with full-time mission heads of large churches. And I think there's a lot that denominational heads and foundations perhaps can learn from each other, even though foundations are very small. Now, lastly, let me just run. Someone asked the question, how does McClellan decide? First of all, we have very little money to give away in comparison to the need. That's always the story. And we've tried to stress several things in the last few years. We need to be, because we have so little money, we need to be as strategic as possible, which means making the greatest impact for Christ's kingdom and being as leveraged as possible, greatest multiplication of our money. This translates to us in the form of a triangle. The higher your giving moves up the organizational ladder, the better the chance of leveraging your money. The old saying goes, give to a single missionary, you win hundreds. Give to change an organization, you win thousands. Fund a model or an idea that can be used by all organizations, win millions. I think in the last few years, we've been trying to work in the top two areas. Instead of just doing projects with a single missionary, we have been trying to help organizations change so that they're not running on two cylinders, they're running on four cylinders, so that they can help themselves even better. And also to fund models or ideas that can be used by all organizations. A couple of examples is two or three agencies in Eastern Europe are working on developing training material for youth workers and how to train the youth workers to evangelize and disciple. This is 10 of the organizations of B's. Two or three of the organizations of B are working on this so that everybody can use them. Another model is that we've been helping to fund two models in South America to understand better how to evangelize a city in Latin America, because the Holy Spirit is moving so well in that whole area. So we've been helping to fund that model, those two models, hoping that they will be useful. We tend to use the triangle effect with strategic giving in the area of theological education. About half of our money goes into theological education because we see how valuable it is. That's not in there, I'm sorry. We see how valuable it is to train the trainers to train the leaders. But training the trainers is so important, so we try to give as much money as we possibly can at the graduate level, recognizing that theological education by extension in many countries is very, very important and is really the first level that needs to be worked through. We're trying to do the same thing in the United States. The triangle, we're trying to reach gatekeepers. We're working with several organizations, including Bill Armstrong, to try to reach businessmen in America who are gatekeepers. They're the ones not only that are effective with their families, but they're also the gatekeepers to many employers in many positions. The businessmen in America is still an unreached people group. Only about 5% of them are active in their churches. Going to the second part of that triangle, here is, we used to give to projects all the time. That's all we used to give to is projects down here at the bottom. Then we realized that we could be funding projects forever and may not make any impact. Maybe the best thing to do is to help the organization itself up there at the top if it needed help. Probably 90% of the organizations that come to us that need help is usually in the area of fundraising. Here's what we list down, sort of a chart we use for an effective Christian organization. Are they meeting a relevant, significant need? Sometimes, and I'd say about a third of the requests that we get are not meeting a relative significant need. The founder started off with one, but the need has really shifted and they're still doing the same thing. Or they've added on. So many of the mission organizations tend to add on. Someone gives them a radio station and something else, so they come in with not a clear mission statement. Not a clear mission statement. Do they have a good strategic plan? Is it achievable? Is it clear? Is it simple? Does it communicate the right thing? If they can communicate the right thing, then they can communicate a vision to the major donor. Down in the organization, do they have an organization structure that can really handle this? We look very, very closely at the leader. Is the man godly? Is he really a leader? Is he a capable CEO? So oftentimes, they're not using the gifts of that person as well as they should be, and you have major disruption in the organization. Fundraising. How many organizations lack good fundraising skills, and often a consultant will help. Just give them the basics. And we've tried to help in that area. I gave you an example of the Faith Mission organization who changed their thrust, changed their vision. They didn't even have a major donor department. I think that's probably typical today. It's what you have is you have the missionary who is so vitally important comes home every 3 years and he solicits his donor for $1,000 or $1,200 and then he goes back out. But the faith mission organizations are coming up supporting more and more nationals and they're coming up with more and more projects that they have to fund. So they really need to know more about their donor and the major donor that is hidden in that group that can easily be reached and given a bigger vision. And then we look for organizations that are modeling it and rolling it out, you know, as we talked about. I've tried to cover an awful lot. So I'll be here at 3 o'clock for any questions.